Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 206 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com or .co.uk, depending on where you are. It doesn't matter. Both will work. And in today's show, we have an interview you did with Natasha Woodford. Tell us a little bit about that, then we'll roll it.
Yeah, so Natasha has recently, me and Natasha have recently joined forces to start up a recruitment business called Clockwork Talent. We've recently just moved in to an office together, and that's kind of a recruitment business, so helping people around the world who are looking to find great search talent or looking to be great search talent and move to different organizations. And we talked a little bit about the recruitment process, some of the things that work in recruitment, some of the things that recruiters, so employers, or indeed candidates can do to increase the likelihood of them finding that right person for the right job at the right time. Me and Natasha are going to have a bit of a chat about digital recruitment and a little bit about kind of some of the things that potentially people who are getting involved in changing jobs or hiring people, some of the things they should be thinking about as well. So Natasha, recently you just started working in an office with myself and Charlotte and out at Gatwick. Can you just kind of, I suppose, introduce yourself and talk a little bit about kind of your background and you know, some of the jobs you've done previously, and kind of, I suppose, introduce Clockwork Talent a little bit. Is that all right?
Yeah, by all means. So Clockwork Talent, we're sharing offices with Brighton SEO here at Gatwick. And I guess, where do we start? Jason is my brother. He is the CEO of Site Visibility.
Yep.
Yourself and myself, we've been working together for a while. And I've been recruiting for Site Visibility for quite some time. And I have another brother who also runs another digital agency. So me and the digital world, we've been working together hand in hand for a few years now. And now we've made it formal.
Yeah.
We've established the recruitment business Clockwork Talent, recruiting for search marketing professionals.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, so prior to that, you kind of did a lot of recruitment in kind of, I suppose, the banking sector, like
different
headhunting
industry.
Rather
yeah.
than recruiting.
No, I've been a headhunter for 15 years.
Yep.
7 of those years was on my own, setting up a boutique search firm.
Yep.
We worked in the emerging markets primarily,
yep.
recruiting for banks, chief executives, chief marketing officers.
Yep.
Very exciting, different market to digital people.
Yeah.
But gave me a pretty good foundation from which to recruit from.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the interesting thing. And one of the things that when we were kind of considering sort of setting up a recruitment business is that, unfortunately, many of the people who are operating in kind of the digital space, the skill that goes into their recruiting is typing into LinkedIn the job title that they have, or maybe typing in the company name of the competitor and just prowling through there and kind of, you know, trying to hit as many people as they possibly can with, you know, connection requests, and then just hope that, you know, throwing enough mud at the wall and hoping that someone sticks, which is kind of, I suppose, quite tricky. And I suppose from me being on the employer end of that, it's meant that kind of very frequently we'll get even people who you've briefed, recruiters, sending through completely irrelevant CVs, people who have, you know, who are .NET developers for, you know, copywriter roles. Or
that's right.
People who are copywriter roles for kind of, you know, web development roles and so on.
They're searching on the buzzwords, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, and not so, perhaps understanding who.
That's right. I'd felt the pain of Jason and yourself recruiting for quite some time. You'd spend a lot of time recruiting, briefing recruiters in the hope that they actually understood what you were looking for. And I guess what I've been able to do is work with you guys and understand how you divide your business, what skill sets are important. You know, forget the technical experience for a moment. You're talking about the personalities, the generic focus that they have, how the project management skills come apart, the campaign management, whether they have an understanding of which accounts you work with. You know, it's not just about searching for SEO or PPC and typing it into LinkedIn and out they pop.
Yeah,
it's more about knowing who the players are.
And I suppose, how does that kind of process look then? So someone will come to you with like a job listing or spec. And I suppose, what are the kind of key things that you're looking for in that job spec that, you know, kind of like really help you get to the heart of a role?
A good job spec will tell me what their responsibilities are going to be, who they're going to report into, what technical experience they're going to have, you know, whether they're going to need to be a coder or whether, say, for a commercial role, they're just going to need a more highbrow understanding of what the technical aspects are. But also understanding the company, you know, the agencies versus in-house roles, they're so very different in terms of the types of people they're looking for. It's not just about the technical experience. It's about the type of people. So getting to understand my clients is really important.
Yeah, and I suppose it's even like the job title can be quite different. So what is an SEA manager role in one organization can be very different to what is an SEA. I mean, I think account manager perhaps is kind of a really prime example of how they can differ, because whereas in some organizations, SEO agencies and digital marketing agencies, account manager doesn't necessarily have to have a huge amount of experience of digital. Their role is entirely kind of relationship-based.
Absolutely.
Whereas in other organizations, that's the doer of the work who perhaps might have no real client contact, and there are other people who, you know, it's managed through their sales team or through
the MD. Right. Talking with each MD or hiring professional, understanding what they really want out of the candidate, what that candidate needs to bring to the table.
And is there particular things that kind of like, say, you know, I mean, I know I've sent job specs through to you in the past and you said, look, Helen, that's not really that helpful. What's kind of some of the things that you think that, like, if someone that, you know, is listening is kind of going to write a job spec for a new role that they're recruiting, what are the things, you know, kind of the, I suppose, the bulleted points that they've definitely got to cover off in a good job spec?
Well, it's usually great if they speak to an incumbent. So if somebody's sitting in that role, what do they do? You know, what is their job day to day? Sometimes the senior management team might have an expectation of what that job is. But then if they actually talk to the job holder, then actually there's a whole bunch of other responsibilities in there that if they had a certain skill set, maybe it would have made the job easier. And it really helps the recruiter to understand, what do they really want? Because we can interview candidates on a brief, or a recruiter can. And if the brief isn't right, then you're wasting an awful lot of everybody's time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's the kind of the, I suppose that's where I think a good recruiter should do, is actually what their job is not just to kind of like have wider contacts, although that is a part of it, or the ability to track people down and have the time to do that. It's actually, it should be saving the person time, I suppose. So rather than actually having to interview 20 people or, you know, pre-qualify 40
usually
CVs.
I think if you know your customer, I think if you know your hiring manager and the company they work for, then you should be able to make a choice of whoever is available in the market or looking in the market or appropriate to the market, and be able to deliver that one individual and get that one interview and make that one hire.
I suppose that's, I mean, I think that's probably, I think an important one that, like, and I suppose the kind of philosophy that we've started to build in that is that it's better to only put one candidate forward, but they definitely get an interview and ideally definitely get the job, because that's when you make money out of it. But, you know, it's better to, rather than put like five people forward, you're like, well, maybe they'll take one of them. It's actually going, no, actually, it's better for the relationship. It's better for the candidate to not be led down a garden path of thinking they're up for a role that they're, you know, no more than, you know, because you've got to ask the candidate's permission to put them forward for it. So you've built them up, and even if, like, you know, if there's no chance of them realistically getting that role, you've kind of potentially damaged the relationship with the candidate.
I'm sitting here nodding.
Oh, well, that's good.
Because that means
good.
So much to me. Knowing yourself and myself in the past, when you were hiring for site visibility, you know, you'd spend time wading through CVs and still not finding the right person.
Yeah.
You'd got all these CVs from recruiters of all different types of individuals.
Yeah.
No one hitting the mark, you know, and you and I sitting down and devising job descriptions that really describe what the role is, what the person will look like. Mm. And I say look like, not physically, but in terms of their experience, whether or not they're going to be leaning more towards the technical side, whether they need more of a customer facing value, are they going to be commercially led? Mm. You know, you want to be able to, as a hiring manager, have confidence in your recruiter that they understand your business, they understand what their goals are long term, so that you can have people in front of you who are appropriate.
Yeah. And so if you're a candidate and you're kind of like looking to get a new role, then what's some of the things that a candidate needs to be doing to set themselves up to find roles? Because I think once you reach a certain level of seniority in digital businesses, that kind of perhaps job boards, it all goes through recruiters, doesn't it? To some extent, or at least a vast majority of it does.
I think one of the stats I saw was 60% of the roles at the moment in the industry are going through your network. And if you've got a strong recruiter or a headhunter in your network, then they can open up an awful lot of doors to you. Mm-hmm. I think as a candidate, you know, I read CVs day in, day out, and some of them are shocking.
Yeah.
Totally misrepresenting an individual. What you want as a CV is a brief synopsis of your skills and experience. Yeah. And perhaps setting the tone from the beginning with what your objective is. Yeah. What are you aiming to do in your career? And it will give an employer a pretty good guideline as to whether or not they meet those criteria.
Yeah.
I think CVs, you know, yes, you do need the buzzwords, the acronyms. That's great. But what we're looking for is what your achievements have been.
Yeah.
Lots of people make the misconception that they write their role, they write their responsibilities.
Yeah.
It's not just your responsibilities. It's what have you actually achieved in that role? How has your career progressed? You know, these are all pretty important.
And what are some of the things that sometimes you'll see then that will worry you there? Like in terms of you look at a CV and go, actually, they might be a good fit for the role. But like, you know, because you're making, you know, not necessarily snap judgments, but certainly, you know, it's, you know, quick decisions, isn't it? Ooh. Is it, you know, like durations of roles, or, you know, is
there something like that? Some of the experience I had in the past said that, you know, candidates should not be job hoppers, for want of a better word. You know, they need some continuity in their career. I think we're a lot more forgiving now of people who move around the industry.
Yeah.
You can have a couple false starts. You might have tried something, it didn't work. Or you might have seen something out in the industry that really does lend to your experience, and it will give you a rapid career progression. Yeah. But I think what we really look for is career progression, you know, taking on more responsibility, whether it's technical responsibility, project management, you know, bigger programs that you've been managing, customer base, more and more important customers for the client.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And do you think things like results have kind of like, so say someone's worked on an SEO campaign and they got like page one listings for this client or number one listings or, you know, 1,000% increase in this or, you know,
hugely, yeah. Hugely. I think if you have an achievement that you've managed to do in your role, you need to list it there. It needs to be obvious. It needs to be visible. But I also don't think your CV should be 10 pages long.
Yeah.
Two punchy pages is great. I think that you need to leave something for the interview.
Yeah.
You know, this CV is supposed to be a synopsis of your career. It's not supposed to be the trilogy.
Yeah. And I suppose if you're going direct to an employer as well, I suppose the advice I would give people, I suppose, is that sometimes it's good to take that job specification that's there. And if they've given you bulleted lists of what they think is important, whether that's in a cover letter or in the CV itself or in the email that you send across, I think it can sometimes be really good to kind of almost make sure, like, so you've got that list there, you print out both pages, you've got the job spec there, you've got your CV or your cover letter next to it, and then you're almost crossing off the things on the job spec to show that. And sometimes it's adding a couple of extra sentences there, and if you do that over a period of time, you're going to cover off lots of different angles. But do you think that's, you know, that type of process is good to do, where it's personalizing it?
I think if you have a job description for the job that you're applying for, read it. It's a good start. And then think about what you've done in your career and what is applicable to that. And if you can put a couple bullet points in that top personal introduction that are keynote achievements, completely supporting the job description, then absolutely. I think most people in our situation today or our economy today have a couple versions of CVs. One will be tailor-made to, I don't know, digital marketing managers. One will be tailored towards the SEO managers. It really depends what they want. You have to think very carefully about the career that you want and then tailor-make your CV.
And I suppose if the role's worth having, it's worth, you know, there's going to be a pay rise in it, it's worth spending an evening or so kind of refining that.
Hugely. And speak to the recruiter that you use. You know, if you're coming with me, I generally work with you and try and build a pretty robust CV. You know, lots of CVs, they're pretty wishy-washy. You need to be punchy. They need to have detail. They need to have numbers. It needs to be quantifiable evidence of what you've been doing.
And is there kind of, I suppose, one of the tricky bits in that kind of pro, I suppose, particularly, maybe jumping to a conclusion, but particularly in the UK, is that sometimes people feel a little bit awkward talking about the salary aspects of roles or kind of negotiating their value. And is there any kind of like particular findings or things that people should bear in mind relating to kind of financial packages that's worth kind of thinking about in the recruitment process, or mistakes that you've seen people make, or things that people have perhaps done that has been quite clever that's acted in their favour for potentially getting a better package than they would have otherwise have done?
I think there's a couple of things you've pointed out there. I think that, first of all, don't focus just in on the money. I firmly believe if it's the right job for you and you're progressing, the money will follow you. I think that using a recruiter really helps support someone through the financial debate.
I suppose you can have a kind of a good cop, well, not necessarily a good cop, bad cop type thing, but it's a kind of, I suppose people might be nervous to negotiate as hard as they would like because they don't want to, you know, set off on the wrong foot with their, you know, potential recruiter.
Absolutely.
Whereas if someone else is having that conversation,
I think if you're using a recruiter, it takes the emphasis off you, so you're not feeling so sort of money-minded about it. But I think also third party, call me a recruiter or a third party, I take that responsibility away from you. I'm motivated to get you the best package as a candidate, but I'm also motivated by the employer to get an acceptable package. So it literally is playing the middleman and doing the negotiation on your behalf to fit within the employer's budget, but also to get an acceptable proposition to you.
But does that happen much? I mean, I suppose in maybe some of those more senior roles where potentially bigger numbers are in play, where there's someone who's kind of, you know, been very, very keen, interviewed very, very well. They've been very, very, very impressed. But when it ultimately came down to the, you know, the some of those numbers and some of those packages where it's all fallen apart on that, or indeed that perhaps went through, but the negotiation maybe set someone off on the wrong foot. Does it happen? Or is actually in most cases, it's like the people come to a
it very rarely breaks down with me in control.
Yeah.
We start from the very beginning, understanding what your package is in your current situation.
Yeah.
We talk about your expectations. We talk about your flexibility. Everybody has a cost of living they're accustomed to. So we know what your break point is, for want of a better word. And I'm also obviously aware of what my employer's budget is. So I have to find the happy medium between the two. And there's lots of bits and pieces in a remuneration package that can be played with usually, you know, car allowances, traveling expenses, bonuses, you know, just trying to make that happy medium between
one
the two.
One tip I heard recently that I thought was a good one was that actually, like, sometimes it can be tricky. Like if there's a salary expectation and someone comes back to you and makes you an offer and that's the salary, it can sometimes be tricky to negotiate up from there, right? Because that's the offer. But then what you could maybe do is kind of say, well, actually it's got 20 days holiday. Could I have 22 days holiday or something like that? That actually does have a kind of financial benefit, right? Because you're not having to work.
Absolutely. But remember there are limitations. And as the recruiter or the middleman, I know what those limitations are. So I'll be guiding you all the way through that process. In the recruitment business, we call that offer management. So when a candidate is offered a job, both the employer and the employee will, through me, pretty much know where the package is coming down to. So it's very rare that a hire or an offer will fall apart because of the money.
I mean, I think that's one thing that does frustrate me, because there's kind of a couple of angles. So I'm working with Natasha on Clockwork Talents, so that's clockworktalent.com, which is this recruitment business, but that sort of spun out to a certain extent from a job board that we launched off the back of Brian SEO. It was originally the Brian SEO jobs board, but now is jobsinsearchmarketing.com. And one of the things we tried to do there is that I'm kind of very adamant about is that I think job adverts should have the salary on them, because I know that, like, you know, if I were looking around and it's something says it's competitive, well, you know, that, you know, competitive might mean it's, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40% less than what you're currently on, which would perhaps not make any sense to move for. But equally, it could be 2-3 times what you're currently getting paid. So therefore, the expectation of someone who's getting paid double your salary is, you know, you might not be the person, you know, because like we said, that an SEA manager can mean a completely different thing, or even a heads of departments. Heads of departments in some agencies get paid one amount and another department get paid four times that. And with that four times more pay comes, you know, four times more responsibility that the person, if they knew the salary, wouldn't necessarily put themselves forward for. So you get that, but then I think, well, actually the problem is no one ever puts them down, so just no one applies, right? Because you don't know if it's up or down or low. Or
it's a tricky one. I think that's something that's happened over the years, because recruiters try to attract many people into the job. You don't want to limit it by saying it's 80 grand and this little guy on 20 grand is desperate for the job and he won't apply because, quite frankly, 80 grand's far out of his possibility. But on the flip side of that, if you say it's a 30 grand post and somebody who's on 60 grand says, well, I don't want that job, it's only worth half of what I'm on now. However, what if the employer has two roles? And so he knows he can offer a competitive package. He has the budget. He doesn't want to put a number down because he thinks he's limiting who's coming to that role. But on the flip side of that, I believe in honesty. I believe in being upfront. I believe in being quite candid. So with my roles, I'm pretty happy to put a salary benchmark on it, but know that there's a bit of flexibility around
it. I mean, and I think the range is a good way of doing that, isn't it? Because it's like, yes, they're, you know, that if they're looking for someone who's on 20k, then that's, you know, they're not going to be able to find 40, are they? But like if they're looking for someone on 35, they might find 37 and a half, you know.
But remember, Kelvin, they might be hiring two different levels. If so, maybe we'll put two jobs up.
Very true. So, I mean, I think there's some, you know, interesting insights there. And I think it's one of these challenges that's really facing the digital sector, particularly search in the UK. And that's kind of why we've kind of begun this process of helping SV and other agencies and other in-house teams and other candidates find those roles. But it really does feel that there's kind of a, there's certainly a skill shortage to some extent where there's not enough good people to go around, but there's also kind of an inefficiency of perhaps some, you know, some elements of the recruitment process that doesn't really do anyone any favours, if you know what I mean. So it's those kind of really vague job descriptions that don't really help the employer find anyone or find candidates to go for, or indeed recruiters here perhaps misrepresenting candidates and therefore damaging their likelihood of getting that role as well. So it's just our own little sort of step really to make recruitment a little bit more trustworthy, a little bit more decent, and hopefully benefit everyone by saving everyone a bit of time and putting themselves in the right place.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed this, Kelvin, because it's interesting for me as a recruiter all my life, working with you, Jason, and other agencies out in the industry. I can feel your pain. I can hear your pain. What I actually enjoy doing is putting together some sort of personal solutions that can help your life a little bit easier in the recruitment way.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for that, Natasha. And yeah, thanks for sharing your experience there. And I think it's a stage and a question and a challenge that everyone has to go through in their career at some stage or other. And yeah, hopefully there's been some advice that will help people who are either looking to recruit people or make the move themselves.
Thank you very much.
That was an interesting interview, and it's interesting to see things from the perspective of someone recruiting, because we don't often do it that way, do we, Kelvin?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my case, I've always either been doing the recruiting or being recruited. So, you know, from the employer side of things, and it's kind of, I think, you know, sitting in the same office with and working with Natasha has made me appreciate kind of some of the real hard work that goes into, you know, navigating that process and the potential complexity that goes into that. So, yeah, it's not quite as easy as I thought it perhaps was, where it was just kind of, yeah, you know, bunging a bunch of stuff into LinkedIn and kind of, you know, email a bunch of people. There's a lot more kind of selective placement and kind of understanding of the job and of the candidate. That I think makes a big difference, really, in terms of, you know, placing the right people in the right roles.
Fantastic. Okay, sitevisibility.co.uk/IM podcast is the place to be if you want to see us on the web. And don't forget questions, both in email form and audio form, kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.co.uk. And the phone number is +44 if you're outside of the UK, 1273 256 150, for those audio questions. And also check us out on iTunes, and please leave reviews and ratings, because we love that, don't we, Kelvin?
We do, we do, we do.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility.
Bye.
Goodbye.
See you later.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.